This is WHTC in Holland. Time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls, which is 395-1450 here. And our guest this morning is attorney Ken Pozicki. Good morning, Ken.
Hey, good morning, Juke.
And Ken's going to talk about legal things. And
No, muscle cars.
Muscle cars?
Muscle cars.
We were talking too
about muscle cars. bag that legal stuff.
I used to have a real hang-up on a Jaguar. I just bought 1954-55, the long hood Jaguar. They were really nice.
With a V12? Or actually, straight 8 or
straight,
a V12?
It was a...
Or a straight 12.
You could get them either way. Either which way. Yeah, straight 12.
They had a long nose, didn't they?
Well, yeah. Okay, let's get legal.
Wow. Well, speaking of that, you know, sometimes people have collectibles, whether it's cars or whether it's jewelry or whether it's just personal property. I'm finding that the biggest headache when you administer an estate, the biggest headache is distributing the items of personal property.
Yeah.
Whether it's the 52 Jaguar with the straight 12 or whether it's mom and dad's wedding album.
Yeah.
Or mom's wedding ring.
Wedding ring.
Or the spoon collection or the patio furniture. And it's ironic because when I was in law school, I made a conscious decision not to get into family law, not to get into divorce.
Yeah.
Because I knew through the grapevine that things get nasty when, you know, ex-husbands and ex-wives go after each other for the mattresses and the refrigerators and the furniture and that kind of stuff. So I said, I don't want to mess with that. Well, here I am.
Messing with that.
An estate attorney. And I tell you, children, siblings going after one another after mom and dad are gone pales in comparison to, you know, a divorced couple. There are a lot of similarities there. What I'm trying to say is if you have items of personal property and if you know you want certain things to go to certain kids, write it down.
Yes.
Date it. Sign it. Make it clear and make it available because depending on who finds that list, it may or may not see the light of day.
That's right.
But I've got a couple cases going right now where it is just a royal headache.
Hmm.
And, of course, the kids are all mad because, everything's in a trust. This should not have happened. Well, whether it's a will, whether it's a trust, whether it's any other kind of estate plan, it's up to the individual to keep track of the items of personal property, where they want it to go. Otherwise, the kids and the outlaws are going to go after each other, and there's not a whole lot you're going to be able to do about
usually
it.
Usually there's no provision in the trust for personal property like that, is there?
Oh, sure there is.
Oh, there is?
Well, usually there's a provision that allows the settlor to put together a list of personal property,
mm-hmm.
provided it's signed and dated, and staple it to the trust. So to that end, absolutely. We want people to take care of that. So otherwise, it's up to the trustee. And how are they going to do it? That's where, you know, being a trustee is a very thankless job.
It is.
A lot of people want to be the trustee. Well, if you're the trustee, you've got a lot of responsibility. And you're never going to make everybody happy. Never. Never, never, never. So it's a very thankless spot. And again, the thing that really gives people headaches is how are we going to divide up the personal stuff? And whether you have an auction, but an auction favors the kid with the most money, or whether you have just a blind pecking order, but people are going to pick the most expensive stuff and leave the cheaper stuff to the end, regardless of sentimental value, it just becomes a royal headache.
Yeah, it does.
So
sometimes it causes a lifetime of fights.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And again, still waters run deep. You know, even in the best of families, if everybody gets along, you know darn well that when mom and dad are gone, all those little childhood fights that they had are going to come back to roost, and
right.
it just gets very ugly. So to the extent that you can write those things down, you save those headaches. So, and I've got one client over at Freedom Village. Bless her heart, all of her worldly possessions are in her apartment, and every item in her apartment has a dot on it, of a different color. So it's either red or green or blue or yellow or orange, depending on which kid is going to get it.
She could designate right that way.
That's right. So when she dies and the kids go through her apartment, They're going to lift the thing up and turn it upside down and see who gets it.
That's fine.
Yeah. So that's a clever way to do it. But yeah, those are the kinds of headaches that, you know, whether you have a will, whether you have a trust, that those personal property items really need to, you know, really need to pay attention.
Yeah.
So anyways.
All right. We're here with Attorney Ken Pozicki this morning. And if you have a question for him, call us 395-1450. The line is open for you. And we'd be happy to hear from you.
It's easy for you to say, yeah.
Yes.
Well, but on this topic of personal property, the other thing that people should do is make it very clear whether or not these items of personal property are going to be allocated a value. Because if my will says I give my 52 Jaguar to my son David, the next question is, oh, does Rachel get a cash equivalent?
Yeah.
And if so, at what value? And of course, David's going to get an appraisal that comes in low, and Rachel's going to get an appraisal that comes in high. But mom and dad can beat them to the punch and say, look, if we distribute certain things to the kids, give it to them off the top. Don't put a value on it. Because most of the time, let's face it, personal property goes to the kids and grandkids as a sentimental token, not because of the value.
Right.
I don't want somebody to go over to Sid Boonstra and put mom's golden ring up on the scale and ask, hey, how much is this worth? You give her the ring, you give the daughter the ring, and without regard to value, it's what's left over that gets divided in equal shares amongst the kids. Otherwise, you're putting values on couches and,
right,
you know, wedding rings and photo albums. And how do you do that? That's where things can really blow up. So if you have items of personal property, put a list together and make it very clear that these things go to the beneficiaries regardless of value, and that those items are not going to be part of that kid's share of the estate.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, you get everybody lawyers up and nobody wins. Not even the lawyers. I don't like doing that kind of work. I mean,
no.
Some people say only the lawyers win. Lawyers don't like doing that. That's ugly work.
Yeah.
That's ugly work. I'd rather be helping people do something constructive rather than, you know, separating the spoons and the forks and the knives and the gun collections and the stamp collections, because that's not fun.
Yeah.
That's not fun. But
I was going to ask you about something that I know somebody did some time ago. They incorporate privately.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how this works, or is it a gainful tax-wise? Or,
well, are you talking about for a business or for estate planning?
Well, for estate planning.
Yeah, well, see, back in the day, and this doesn't, people don't do this too much anymore, but back in the late 80s, back in the mid to late 90s, people used to set up corporations or limited liability companies, mm-hmm, and put all their assets into this limited liability company. And then rather than give things to their kids, they would give them shares of this family limited liability company. And the idea was that a share of this family limited liability company had a reduced value. Okay? Rather than give the kid 50 shares of Microsoft stock, you give him 2 shares of the family limited liability company.
I see.
And the argument is, what are those shares of that limited liability company worth to the kid?
Mm-hmm.
Not much. Who's going to buy it?
Yeah.
You're buying a headache. So what these folks were doing is they were taking discounts. So they're saying, okay, these shares in this limited liability company looks like it might be worth $10,000 based on the value of the assets in the company. But because you can't sell anything, because you can't sell these shares of the family company, you give them a 40% discount.
Mm-hmm.
So now, rather than that gift being worth $10,000, it's worth $6,000.
Yeah.
And on top of that, if they are a minority shareholder, if they only own 2% of the family company, they have no power to say anything. They have no power to do anything on the company, so they're minority. They're a minority interest, and the IRS says, okay, if you're a minority shareholder, we're going to give you another discount, 30%. So what looks like a gift of $10,000 really, for IRS purposes, is only a gift of $3,000 or $4,000.
Yeah.
And the IRS lets you do that with family businesses, bona fide family businesses, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a store, whether it's a family dairy, okay? Family businesses can do that because it's a legitimate business, because you're incorporating for a legitimate business reason. But back in the 90s, what people are doing is they're putting their house in there. They're putting their stocks and bonds in there. And there was really no legitimate business purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And the IRS got all over that, and they said, look, you can't take advantage of this liquidity discount of 40% or this minority interest discount of 30% unless it's a legitimate business.
Mm.
And so the IRS started really clamming down on those, and you really don't see many of them anymore. Every so often one will pop out of the woodwork, but by and large that was a sham that had its day.
Had its day.
But
okay.
You don't see too many of them anymore.
Okay.
Back to that idea of the corporations to reduce the value of the estate. You don't see that much anymore because the estate tax limit is up to $5.25 million per person, $10.5 million per couple. So it's really not popular
unless
anymore.
You have a farm or a piece of property.
Exactly, and then you should do it, especially where you have kids involved in the family,
mm-hmm.
or in the family business. So if you've got a dairy farm or if you've got a family restaurant and the kids are involved in the operation, you should incorporate for number one for liability purposes. But to keep the kids in the business and to keep them motivated, you want to give them a little ownership in the business.
Yeah.
So there are very legitimate reasons to incorporating and to give kids shares of the company for tax reasons. But these shams that we were talking about earlier, those are by and large those don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that I want to talk generally about is. As you know, a lot of my a large part of my practice now is Medicaid planning for people in nursing homes, and almost without fail, when I'm meeting with spouses or children to apply for Medicaid for somebody, they are always surprised, shocked, angry when I tell them that all of the charitable gifts that mom and dad gave within the past 5 years. Have to be counted, and there's typically a penalty associated with all those gifts.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, most of us tithe. We give money to church every week or every time we go. But for somebody who is looking at Medicaid, either in-home Medicaid or nursing home Medicaid, all those gifts, $50 a week for the past 5 years, comes back to bite you. Even if you don't have any money.
Right.
Okay, single person, if they run out of money and they apply for Medicaid, Medicaid says, all right, how much did your dad give away in the past 5 years to anybody? We're talking $25 gifts to the grandkids. We're talking, you know, $20 gifts to the Boys and Girls Club, all the gifts to the church. And you add those up, and those basically will be counted against you for Medicaid purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's going to go to jail for that, but what happens is they take the total of those gifts. Let's say the total giving over the past 5 years is $10,000. Okay, Medicaid takes that $10,000 and they divide by the average cost of a nursing home, which this year is about $7,600. So they'll say, all right, Juke, you got no money. You're applying for Medicaid. We get that. How much have you given away in the past 5 years? And you look through your checkbook, you add it all up. Well, I gave $10,000. Well, that $10,000 would have bought you about a month and a half. So even though you're out of money, you're not going to be eligible for Medicaid for a month and a half.
We have a call. Better take
sure,
that.
Fire away.
Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Good morning. I have a question on a fiduciary for a family trust.
Sure.
If you do not want to list your children, can you list the attorney, or do you have other recommendations on who to list as the fiduciary?
Well, it's a very delicate thing. Most people list their children, and Dave Carrier would say, don't list children, list a child with successors, naming one of them at a time. Because he's of the opinion, and I don't disagree with him necessarily, that if you name more than one trustee, it creates complications. But if you don't want your children, for whatever reason, if you don't want your children to be the trustees, either they don't get along, or they're not good with money, or they're married to, you know, outlaws that might put their noses in the business, you can name a corporate trustee, you know, whether it's Macatawa Bank or West Michigan Community Bank, or you, from time to time, people name attorneys. Now, I'll be very honest with you. I've been a trustee on three trusts now, and I've regretted every one of them. I kid you not, because it is thankless.
Hey, I've been there, done that. That's why I'm calling.
Yep, and you cannot do anything right. Either you're charging too much per hour, or you're spending too much time doing something, or you do something and it ends up not being fruitful. And then you have the awkward issue of the attorney being the trustee of his own client.
Okay, yep.
And some might say, well, that's a conflict of interest. If I name myself as the trustee of everybody for whom I do a trust, I'm going to be a rich man.
Yep.
I'm not going to have any hair at the end of the day because I will have pulled it all out. But there's a conflict of interest for somebody to set up a trust and then turn around and name himself as the trustee when the client dies.
Right.
So you got to be. It's a very delicate issue. I wish I had a straight answer, but most people name their kids. Some people name a corporate trustee. Of course, corporate trustees charge a fee, as do lawyers.
Right,
and quite
right,
frankly,
right.
It's cheaper to have a corporate trustee than to have your lawyer do it.
Sure, that'd be understandable.
Yeah.
Yep. But I think it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on a family member with his siblings.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
As the trustee.
Yep, it's a thankless spot.
It sure is.
You know, whether it's, you know, how much did you sell the house for, or who did you give mom's wedding ring to for, or
exactly.
why didn't you get it done in the first week after mom died?
Exactly.
I'm catching that on a case right now where the kids are complaining that, you know, mom's been dead almost a month and the estate's still open.
Yeah.
Well, what's going on?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's like, you know, so it's a very thankless spot to ask somebody to be your trustee. Is doing them no favors, and I totally agree with you. It sounds like you've been through it. It's a thankless spot. The key though to any trustee is you need to be transparent. Tell people what is happening. Give them updates to the extent that you keep them in the dark. To the extent that you keep them in the dark about what you're doing, they're going to get upset.
But
if you keep them updated as you go, whether it's by emails or sending them copies of everything, that will hopefully alleviate what's going on.
Okay, so right now our trust has named two of our children as the fiduciaries.
Mm-hmm.
If we'd want to change that to a local bank, we should come into your office and switch that around in our trust.
Yeah, it's a very simple. You amend the trust. You take paragraph A out. You put a new paragraph A in that says, "We here upon our deaths, we appoint West Michigan Community Bank to be the trustee of the trust."
Okay.
Very easily done.
Do you know what the typical fee is for a bank to be a trustee?
Right around 2%. Some are lower, some are higher, and it is a sliding scale depending on how much you're dealing with.
And it also
depends on whether it's a one and done, whether you liquidate everything and distribute it, or whether you want the trust to hang, or whether you want the bank to hang on to it, you know, until the kids are 60.
Sure.
And that plays into it as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
You've been very helpful. Well, thank you.
I appreciate the call.
Yep. Bye bye.
Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have a friend who had this happen to her, and she and her husband had tithed regularly,
mm-hmm.
and she was probably $25,000 into the giving,
yeah.
And it was a sudden thing that happened to him. He wasn't old, he wasn't sick, but something happened. He ended up in the nursing home. Now, what would you consider some kind of solution to this problem? Is there a way?
Absolutely.
You can
appeal to an administrative judge. And you actually, the circumstances that you're describing are very interesting because Medicaid assumes, in fact, there's a presumption that anybody who is typically 70 or older, they presume that if you're giving money away, it's in order to qualify you for Medicaid.
Okay.
Now, for somebody who is young, and I'm not
to who now?
There's an administrative law judge. When you apply for Medicaid and they deny you or they assess a penalty, you can appeal that for what's called an undue hardship. I mean, again, if there's a young person and they have a stroke or they get into a motor vehicle accident and they end up in a nursing home, there's no way that they were tithing solely for the purpose of going on Medicaid.
Exactly. He was probably in his 60s.
Sure.
Not ill.
Yeah. See, if you appeal that to an administrative law judge and say, look, judge, here's what's going on. This guy's in his 60s. Okay, he's not looking at nursing home care anytime soon. He just had this vascular accident or whatever happened. Mm-hmm. The judge is going to look at that and say, okay, we know why he was giving to tithe. He was not giving for the sole purpose of qualifying for Medicaid.
That was the way it was.
You bet. And any administrative law judge is going to look at those facts and take away the penalty.
Well, I haven't talked to her for a while, so I don't know how that all ended up. But she was just really upset because she felt she was going to have to mortgage her home. And, she didn't know what to do.
Yeah, that's a very awkward set of circumstances.
Full care in a nursing home.
Yeah, my heart goes out to her because that's hard for anybody at any age. Let alone somebody who gets surprised like that.
Yes, exactly.
That's a tough one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And a quick look at our weather here. The weather brought to you by the Wooden Shoe Restaurant. Come in for lunch and pick a pair. And the weather today, mostly sunny with a high of 81. Tonight, clear with a low of 61. And tomorrow, sunshine with a high of 78 right now, 69. And the water out at the beach is 66 degrees with a green flag. And we have another call coming in, I do believe. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Yes, I have a question for the attorney.
Yeah, sure.
There's two brothers, and the father died, and one is a trustee.
Okay.
And the trustee seems to think everything in the trust is his.
No.
And so he hasn't given the brother anything, even a penny.
Oh,
but
boy.
He's given the grandkids a portion. And this brother will not even let the brother know what's in the father's trust.
Well, you need to call somebody because one of the first things that the trustee has to do by law is give a copy of the trust to the beneficiaries.
Yes, and he has not. And this brother has requested it many times.
Well, I hate to say it, but that's when you have to call a lawyer and put some heat on him.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
Yeah,
why did they think it's theirs?
Well, I'd be very curious to see that father's trust.
Yeah.
Because if the trust, in fact, leaves everything to the one son, the one son should show it to the other kid and say, look, Dad disinherited you. Go away.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if the trust divided things between the two kids, both kids have a right to see the trust.
Right.
And they have a right to see what was in it on the day Dad died.
Mm.
So when somebody dies, whether they have a will or whether they have a trust, the executor or the trustee has to give a copy of the will to the beneficiaries, has to give a copy of the trust to the beneficiaries, and then has to tell them what's in it, what's in the estate. And that goes back to the transparency thing. The trustee has to keep the beneficiaries apprised of what's going on.
Yeah.
Just keep them apprised. And you know, my experience has been if you keep people apprised of what's going on, they typically don't get mad at you. It's when you stop communicating.
Yeah.
When you don't show them the trust.
And you buy a new car.
Yeah, that's when things can go awry real quick.
Yeah.
So and back to the gentleman caller, it all boils down to who your trustee is.
Yeah.
If you choose the wrong trustee, that estate could be, you know, living hell.
Yeah.
I mean, it really could. If you don't choose the right trustee, things can go to a hay basket really, really quick. And, you know, even with the best drafted trust, you could have a very well drafted trust, and everything could be in the trust. But if you choose the wrong trustee, it's all for naught.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a tough spot. That's a tough
one. Well, if you choose one of your, it's hard to choose one of your kids, too.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
Because you know that, well, he would do this, and
yeah.
I'm not sure that he would do this.
And a lot of people go with the oldest son.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, they, again, in a second marriage, we typically have one child from either side of the aisle being the trustee to make sure that things go where they're supposed to go.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the choice of a trustee is absolutely critical. Again, Dave Carrier hates co-trustees. Depending on the circumstances, I sometimes prefer co-trustees. So two people have their eyes on the books. But yeah, it's a tough spot.
And we got to get out of here, Ken. We're out of time.
That was quick. Again,
thanks very much for being our guest today here on Talk of the Town.